what we're going to do to ensure that it's going to be useful to you. Marika mentioned that one of the goals of the project is raising awareness. But that's by no means the only goal. The fact that lots of you have come today indicates that actually awareness about issues around the preservation of web resources, either the fact that it's important or the fact that it's difficult or the fact that we can't work out who's meant to be doing things with different sets of resources, there's already a fair amount of awareness out there. But for reasons that we hope to tease out, people either feel unable to do something or they feel that there are technical, organisational, financial or other sorts of resource barriers to actually doing what they want to do. Or in some cases, perhaps we feel that we're not entirely confident that the answers we found are the right ones, that there might be a better answer out there. So we're tasked with producing, amongst the outputs in the project, a handbook that's meant to be targeted both at people with the responsibility for creating and managing web resources, and also at the people who've got responsibilities for information management. That includes record managers, but there's a much wider set of professional groupings that have to deal with that. So we want to speak to all of the relevant communities in language that makes sense to you, and hopefully bring together the understanding from the different communities so that you can have consistent policies across your institution that actually achieve the ends you want. And we could summarise what we're trying to do there is we want to help you make effective decisions around preserving web resources, and then we want to help you implement those decisions in the most straightforward way possible. That's boiling it down. So today we're just going to begin trying to validate. We think we've got some of the answers. We haven't got all the answers by any means. So there may well be gaps in our thinking. We'd like to hear about those gaps. Or it may be that we're thinking of putting effort into something that you'll tell us, actually, don't bother. You know, we don't need that, we don't want that, or we already know the answers. So those effective decisions, well, you want one way of measuring the effectiveness of the decision, that it needs to be consistent with any other policy that's already in existence and with any other regulations, laws. We're going to hear a bit about some of those legal constraints later on today. Marika's mentioned things like retention schedules. They're one of the institution-wide policies which you'd want to be consistent with. Some of them may be quite explicit about web resources, but I think in general in higher education institutions, they're going to be quite generic. They're going to talk about information regardless of the form in which it's expressed. And therefore, the difficulty we might have is taking that generic policy that talks about types of information or places that it comes from and thinking, does that apply to anything on our website? And if it does, how do we translate the requirements of the generic policy into some specific thing that we can do? Effective decisions are also ones that you can take quickly. All of you, I'm sure, will be familiar with universities in general seem to be very good at creating committees and other structures whose main task appears to be to postpone making any decisions or to frustrate the making of decisions. I'm sure all of us are from institutions that don't suffer from that problem, but nonetheless, we want to be able to decide things quickly and to make sure that for everyone that matters, it's difficult to disagree. And we want to be able to take those decisions cheaply and to implement them cheaply. And ideally, you want to be able to construct policies and make decisions that are reasonable for you and your institution, so that you don't have a committee to decide what to do with the physics department's website and then 6 months later decide that you have to go through the whole exercise again for the chemistry department website or the history department. You want to be able to make generic policies about departmental or faculty resources or about institution resources. And ideally, we'd like to see decisions and policies that can be reused across institutions as well as within the institution. You want decisions that are going to stand the test of time and not have to be revisited or changed every year or every 2 years just because the technology changed, just because there's a slight shift in the organisational structure that we're dealing with. And of course, we need to take decisions that we can actually implement, that actually fit with the technology and the organisation that we've got. So, amongst the characteristics of the decisions that we want to help you take, and this is one of the first areas where we're very keen to understand, are the gaps. Is there something we've missed here? What does policy or regulation tell you that you must keep? In other words, that there's a law here, there's something absolute that says this must be kept. And also, what sort of things fit into that category of, well, we ought to do this? It's not so much that, that we'll be sued or anything if we don't hang on to it, but there's a strong message, moral or use case or otherwise, that tells us we ought to hang on to something. And resources you want to keep for research purposes might well fall into that. You can see there's a great use in doing it, but there may be other barriers to doing it. But also, those same pressures that tell you you must do something or you should do something can go in the other directions and tell you that there are some things that you really ought to throw away. Because not throwing them away either gets you into legal or regulatory problems, and again we'll be hearing about those later, or else because not throwing them away just gives you this huge amount of stuff to manage that you don't want to deal with. You know, life is easier sometimes if we declutter, as it were. And certainly that's true when you're trying to keep lots of different technologies and systems and websites going. You also want to be confident and know if you are keeping something or if you're throwing something away, why are you doing it? Who are you doing it for? Because that will affect sometimes the nature of why you're doing things. If it's simply because the auditors might want to look at something, you don't need to worry too much about creating a wonderful means of accessing the resources that you've preserved. If you're trying to keep something to use in teaching or to use in research, you will want to put a lot more thought, not into just how you capture it, but into how you make people aware that it exists and how you provide the means for them to do something useful with it. Those things can also inform who's actually going to do the work. Sometimes it's not your institution's job to do this. There are things that need to be kept, but it's not our job to do it. Or there are other people that will do it anyway, whether we ask them to or not. Or perhaps other people we pay to do it. Sometimes that's the right answer. And having taken some of those decisions, we also need to understand what about the world is going to have to change to make it happen. Do we have to start using a different means of authoring our web pages? Will we have to make changes to how we configure a server? Do we need to change who's got authority to do certain things with our web resources? What are the consequences of some of these changes going to be? Because there's definitely a fear amongst many people that some of the suggestions about how you preserve things put us in a technological straitjacket. They prevent people exploring innovative ideas. And innovation with web resources is the key to how we use many of them. And it's not necessarily ideal if the solution to preservation is to actually prevent us doing something useful in the first place. That's not the way these things ought to be. Those decisions that we take about preserving or not preserving things might apply to a whole different aspects of web resources. And this is what we need to think about, who we're keeping it for and why we're keeping it. There's the information content, in a sense, that the words, the images, the other resources that might appear on the web page. And sometimes that's what matters. What words are there in what order? Sometimes the actual appearance is also extremely important as well. And sometimes what we want to capture is the behaviour. What links to what? What happens when I click on things, when I mouse over things? We're not talking about preserving something static, but about preserving something that's dynamic, that interacts with other things. Sometimes it's the relationships between the information that we're interested about, the pattern of linkages throughout a website. It can also be extremely important in some environments, and I'll mention a little bit about an example of this in a moment, to know not just about what a website or web resources look like at a particular point in time, but about how it changed. When did something change? Why did it change? Who authorised that change? What did it look like before that? And sometimes we might be interested in capturing not the information that's presented as such, but the information about who used it and when?
So we'll give one example, which I came across some years ago through work we've been doing with government on preserving government information. This is one of these things that may or may not be apocryphal, but whether or not it actually happened, I think it's an interesting illustration of often the sort of drivers that force people to keep things. A particular government agency, and we'll call them the Inland Revenue, but they might well not be, provides guidance to the public on the web. In the past, it used to provide lots of printed information about how to fill out particular forms, what information you had to provide, what information you didn't have to provide. But these days, a lot of that is done by the web. The guidance is changing all the time. And they've got a good content management system that tells you when the pages changed and who changed them. But the content management system isn't telling you what was there beforehand. And in a particular case, an individual provided information to this government department based on guidance as it was on a web page on a particular day. By the time somebody came to adjudicate and look at this, they felt that the person perhaps was trying to conceal information. The way in which they provided the information was not consistent with the guidance at a later date. That fact wasn't in dispute. Both sides agreed the guidance had changed in between the information being submitted and the point at which an adjudicator had to decide about these things. But the individual claimed that the original guidance said something quite different, and that their submission was consistent with the guidance at that date. And the government department denied that, but was unable to demonstrate what the original guidance said. And in that particular case, the individual won their case against in the revenue, whoever it might have been at the time. So the conclusion from that is that for that particular type of information and in that context, it's important to keep old content. It's important to know what your website used to say at a particular time. So that's an example where it's not so much that the law tells us that we need to keep things, but there are strong sort of regulatory pressures that suggest it'd be a good idea to hang on to stuff. But there are other reasons why we might want to keep things for research purposes. Now this is one example of a sort of thing that they're quite familiar with, a sitemap that's intended to give browsers, people visiting our site, some idea of where the information is and how it's constructed. But there are lots of different tools, and those of you involved in web management are probably more familiar with a number of these than I am. Things that help you visualize at a very broad level what's going on my site, how does all this stuff fit together. And I think there are contexts, whether it's on managing your own site or whether it's for doing research on how the use of the web has changed, where this type of information is actually what we want to keep. We're not too worried what that page says. What we're worried about is, what's its title? Where does it fit in that hierarchy of spaces? And beyond that, I think there's also research interest in looking at how do different aspects of the web connect with each other? How have they changed over time? This is an attempt to visualize the changes in the relationships and information on a large and complex corporate website over time. So there's no attempt here to drill down to individual pages. This is thinking about information as a big cloud, a network of stuff. And there are things that we can understand about our content, I think, that are only expressible in this way. And similarly, tools to visualize how users navigate through your site that I'm sure many of you involved in web management will be familiar with also become more useful if we can look back in time and understand what was the implication of the changes that I made to the structure of the site that many years ago. How did it change behavior moving through my site? And how does my site interact with the rest of the world? And I'm very grateful to someone called Martin Dodge at the University of Manchester, whose cyber geography page, like I see Humphrey is familiar with all this material, are the source for all of those images and many, many more. If you've not come across that stuff, it's inspirational as providing you lots and lots of examples of different ways of viewing what are described as information landscapes, of which the web is just one. Okay, so assuming that we've helped you make some decisions about what you want to keep and what you don't want to keep and who you're keeping it for and all of these sorts of things, we then want to help you with taking those decisions. So we think it's going to be useful to provide you with guidance on how you might go about preserving resources and how you might go about getting rid of them. What sort of things you need to take into account? What are the pitfalls? Specific advice on the merits of different harvesting tools, on capture tools, which might turn web pages into something else. Let's say Adobe's tool, which allows you to capture a set of web pages as a PDF, might be appropriate in some contexts. Certainly, it's the sort of approach that some people have used. Guidance on using your content management systems, perhaps, as a means of preserving information. And guidance on when you can get other people to do the work for you. GISC, for instance, already committed to capturing the outputs of GISC-funded project websites. So that's one small aspect of what's going on at HE that you don't need to worry about. And at some point in the future, the deposit libraries are going to be doing a great deal more in terms of capturing the web in the UK. Exactly how much we can rely on them to do the job for us, we don't know yet. But that's going to affect things in the future. And also, knowing when to do nothing is sensible as well. There are times, if we're in that space where we're saying, well, we ought to keep this, but we don't have to keep it. But following through the decision and looking at these guidance tells you that keeping something involves a huge cost, or it involves consequences for your web resources that you're not really happy with, then perhaps the best thing to do is not to do it at all. Be aware that you want to keep the stuff, and that perhaps that's something you review in a few years' time when the technological landscape has changed. So the outline structure of this handbook that we're hoping to produce is going to contain these sorts of elements. Working out what you've got and who's responsible for it. It's often a big job. There are almost every university has lots and lots and lots of websites, not all of which should be under any sort of central management. Working out what policies you've got that might be relevant, not just the ones to do with records management, but all sorts of other policies to do with information management. Understanding them. Assigning that responsibility and beginning to scope out what your preservation activity might need to be. We've also assumed we're going to have two small sections which attempt to explain the language to different communities. A quick guide to records management for web managers, a quick guide to web management for records managers. We hope that sort of thing's going to be useful. And assessing your own institution's technical capacity and its ability to implement some of the technical solutions that we've identified. The handbook will also contain information to guide you on the decision about who wants stuff and why they might want it. Specific information on the tools that I mentioned earlier, like harvesting tools and capture tools. Information about how you manage stuff once you've preserved it. Thinking about different strategies for access and for metadata. Guidelines on how much stuff you need to capture and how often you need to do it. And on the implications of change, on the negative consequences and the positive consequences, perhaps, for change. So what we want confirmation about from you today is, are those problems we described the problems that you think you're facing? Or have you come here with some completely different idea of what your problems are? Is that outline structure, do you think that's going to give you the answers that you actually need to do what you want? And also, I must admit, I'm somewhat more nervous about that last point. Is actually a handbook the appropriate way to do this? I mean, we've gone into this and budgeted and funded it and planned it on the assumption that we are going to produce a handbook. But it's possible that there are other ways that information might be more usefully provided, and it'd be better if we knew earlier rather than later. Okay, I'll stop at that point. There's a question already.
The danger in writing a handbook, particularly looking at the web, where things change so fast that in a couple of years' time, the handbook is no really an appropriate resource anymore.
Yeah.
The project's finished. Yeah, great, it was useful for a few months, but now it's dead. I mean, do you have an exit strategy to try and maintain this, perhaps building case studies? Because a lot of the challenge is going to be negotiating the organisational politics.
Mm-hmm.
Case studies that show how that's been tackled, successful otherwise, useful. So building sort of case studies beyond the project end would also be a good idea.
I absolutely agree. I think it's always difficult to say how funding bodies react, but my guess would be that if we produce something that's demonstrably of use to people, then generating the will and the funding to keep that maintained shouldn't be too difficult. You're absolutely right. If the handbook ends up being something that's frozen in print, then that's not an appropriate solution. I don't think that's the sort of thing we're expecting to do. If it's produced as something online which is capable of being updated piecemeal to take account changes, then that's...
What about tweaking? Rather than one project taking ownership, the community takes ownership.
Yeah.
So whilst you might want to handbook so it's not polluted by some advantages for the particular sort of view of the way you can in the tweaking, alongside that, the tweaking perhaps can then grow and be maintained by the community, therefore you get away from trying to have person Z funded by organisation Y.
I've certainly got a personal enthusiasm for that sort of thing. I think often one still needs somebody who's either moderating it or gingering people to produce content when they need to. And certainly producing case studies isn't going to happen without somebody making it happen. But
I found when it comes to HR documents, for instance, to do with diversity or recruitment or other aspects, the most useful resource is a handbook that sits on the desk.
Mm-hmm.
I find it extremely useful to have something to just pull off and refer to. But I agree with the points about keeping it up to date, and the wiki's an ideal environment for doing that. So, complete printed copy.
Okay, so there's a suggestion there that you want something in print, as well as something that's dynamic and online. Okay, that's... Any other thoughts on those general...
I could probably talk half a day about this. Before you get down to do the thing about policy, there's your whole philosophy. You know, do we approach this as reference management? Right, we've got to have a narrow focus. We need X, Y, and Z for legal reasons, or maintaining a basic history. Or do you say, well, now what we're doing, we're really sort of going to produce an archive so that 50 years from now, a social historian will be able to experience what people experience on a website now. In which case, you preserve pretty much everything, and you're about thinking, well, how do we have something that can still be used with systems 50 years' time? It doesn't rely on Civil Service 2005, that sort of thing. The whole challenge suddenly becomes very different. Is the philosophy behind this project more like a more focused records management? Or are you perhaps trying to...
No,
would you fit both philosophies?
I've mentioned records management because our suspicion, and we're willing to hear otherwise here, is that one of the most urgent drivers for many institutions is around preserving things because of legal and regulatory constraints or because of policy constraints to do with records management. The images that I put there were trying to illustrate that I think there are reasons for keeping things for research purposes. And certainly some of the visualisation work that's been done there, where you're trying to track the interconnections between parts of the web over long periods of time, is only possible not because individual institutions have preserved things, but because people like the Internet Archive have huge collections of material. Not perfect collections and not complete collections, but they're the only people who've got enough stuff that allows you to carry out some of that large-scale quantitative research, which is perhaps different from some of the use cases you were mentioning with social historians. But yes, I think there are different requirements there, because you're talking about very, very long-term availability, as opposed to the sort of thing where financial audit says you have to hang on to stuff for 7 years, for instance.
Well, from the next hand, I've got another point. You could look at this from a different level. So you say, right, we're going to go for best practice. Do you do an absolute gold standard job because we've got the resources? An organisation is usually well structured, so we can do it. Or someone might say, well, hang on, our organisation is a complete mess. We can't impose structure on it. But no resources, what's the least worst approach and what's the bare minimum? or somebody wants to go in between. So I'm wondering whether this handbook could perhaps have an outline of sort of different levels of ambition you might have, and how you might think about how your organisation might
reach
those levels.
When we talk about the idea of effective decision making, that's exactly the sort of thing we have in mind, about matching your ideal against what you've actually got available to you now, whether it be technology or whether it be money, whether it be time, and recognising, yes, that it's not going to be the same, even given the same initial problem, you're not going to come up with the same answer in different institutions, because it's more important. Sometimes it's more important to do something, even if it's not the ideal. On other occasions, if you can't do it the proper way, it's best not to do it at all. So yes, we'll try and give some guidance about those sort of aspects, about different approaches. Okay, one more, and I think we'll then move on to the breakout sessions.
along the lines of ambition, this is possibly extremely ambitious, but instead of actually providing guidelines, would it possibly make sense to provide a practical service whereby you're talking about preservation,
mm-hmm.